Welcome back to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn, and with me in the studio once again, Detective Will Campbell of the New Hanover County Sheriff's Office and Jessica Green of Coastal Horizons Rape Crisis Center. If you have a question or a comment for any of our guests, give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can send an email to coastline@whqr.org or tweet us at @CoastlineHQR. Don from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hi. Yes, I suspect that a lot of the people that you're talking about are caught up in human trafficking, the victims. They're reluctant to be helped. They feel, I believe, like they're in a situation where they're going to be somehow punished for what they're doing. And if you look at how they got there, I mean, at some point they were probably trying to be helped to not get into the situation that landed them in that spot. I mean, by their family, their friends. I mean, that's a long chain of, you know, circumstances and events that led them to this position.
That's a great point, Don, and that's something, Jessica Green, we've been seeing a shift in how we're treating victims. Are we seeing a shift in how victims view those people who are trying to help them?
Yes, that is something that we work really hard to work towards, and that's why we do the multidisciplinary collaborative approach to it, because, you know, these victims are taught not to trust systems. Maybe they have attempted to reach out before and that's been unsuccessful for them, or people didn't know how to help them, had not been educated and trained on how to help them effectively. And so, you know, we really try to approach it from a way of, you know, this is your experience. You are telling us what you need. We will inform you of your options. There's no pressure. And hopefully that's something that they respond to and that they know that when they do, again, decide to leave that dangerous situation, that they are going to get the help that they need and that they're not going to be punished in any way.
And that is an educational process in terms of getting that message out to the public, isn't it, Jessica Green?
Absolutely.
Don, well, thanks.
My mind is going in the direction of they have to help themselves, but they can't. But the people that are most like themselves are other people that have been victims of this, just like alcoholics, you know, Join Alcoholics Anonymous, drug users. They connect with other drug users better than anybody else. So what about that, going in that direction?
How do they get out of the fishbowl? Is that what you mean, Don?
Oh, well, like, you know, how do they connect up with other people that are like themselves, you know?
Oh, you mean how do they connect with other victims that...
Get help from other victims like themselves, you know, because I bet those people have the most experience with dealing, you know, with getting out of the situation and dealing with the aftermath. They know what it means.
Jessica Green?
Yeah, absolutely. And you are completely right. And sometimes having other survivors talk about their experiences can be something that's really helpful. And so we let people know, you do not have to commit to anything. You don't have to commit to filing a report or anything like that, but you can still get services, which include survivors groups where they can come and talk with other survivors about their experience. And some of those may, in fact, be survivors of human trafficking. And then that way they are able to kind of learn from each other. And because what we don't want to do is we don't want to tell community members, oh, go out and search out victims of human trafficking and spread the word to them, because that can actually be very dangerous and very counterintuitive. So we have to create an environment where survivors can come forward, and a lot of that has to do with, survivors supporting one another.
Thanks so much for your call, Don. What are some of the indicators that suggest there could be a human trafficking situation? And I'm talking about not from a law enforcement perspective, Detective Campbell, but what would you tell members of the public to look out for?
I mean, some of the red flags, I guess, if we start from the beginning, kind of like what Jessica said earlier. These girls that are very vulnerable, that have experienced sexual abuse early on in life, they come from not always single-parent homes, but a lot of single-parent homes or parents that are in prison, things like that. One of the biggest things that we at the Sheriff's Office are seeing now, not so much just with sex trafficking, human trafficking, but with pretty much every, you know, the criminal aspect we're dealing with now is social media and the internet.
How is that helping traffickers?
Well, in pretty much every case that I've worked, the traffickers have reached out through social media and just send out mass messages through various social media outlets trying to recruit young girls that are vulnerable. And they send out a very specific message to all of them. You know, I see the same message sent to 30 or 40 girls a day that, you know, who do you live with? How's school? Are your parents at home? Do you play sports? You know, they don't want somebody who's, you know, a honor roll that is, you know, star athlete. And, you know, they want the one who's sitting at home by themselves at, you know, 5:30 in the afternoon and nobody's there.
So who does this girl think is messaging her?
A potential boyfriend, a friend, something like that. Somebody's reaching out to her, showing her the attention that nobody else is showing her right now. And that's how it starts. You know, he'll provide, you know, the attention that she's longing for. And then soon enough, you know, that's all she has. And she has nowhere to run after she's already with him because that's what she knows.
So is it enough to teach our girls not to talk to older men? Or do they sometimes bond with the potential victim in a way before revealing who they are? Or what do you say to a child to help prevent this?
And you say older men, too. It's not always older men. I mean, I've seen it with the age gap is you know, 4 or 5 years between victim and trafficker.
In fact, the one who was convicted in January.
Yes, ma'am.
He was 20 years old. You can call me Rachel. Thank you for that. He was 20 years old. Is that right? I might be conflating
him
with the
September.
One.
That one is September.
Okay.
The one in January was a little bit older, but at the time when everything was going on, he was still no more than, you know, 4 or 5 years age difference.
Under
21 victims.
Years old.
Yes.
So not even legally able to drink.
No, ma'am.
And he's pimping. Jessica Green.
Well, and I think it's important to note that not only do we need to be having discussions with young girls about what healthy relationships look like, but we also need to be having discussions with young men about what healthy relationships look like and addressing, you know, we are bombarded with images every single day that teach us to objectify other people, and that can be really harmful, and it creates this attitude where you can view someone as less than a person, and that's the first step towards committing an act of violence against someone.
Viewing someone as an object.
Right.
And actually, since you bring this up, there was a video blog in which actor and comedian Russell Brand talked about this. And he talked about it through the lens of softcore pornography. He talked about some of the documented harmful effects of this. And he also talks about how it actually affects him. So let's listen.
And one of the reasons that I've sensed that pornography isn't good for me as an individual is because of this the kind of conclusions reached by Gary R. Brooks, who's observed the consumption of softcore pornography like Playboy. He talked about the five main symptoms of looking at softcore porn. But softcore porn really is everywhere. 50 Shades of Grey is softcore porn. TV adverts, billboards are full of softcore porn. And here are some of the effects of this, the symbolism of this culture. Voyeurism, an obsession with looking at women rather than interacting with them. I do that sometimes. I just think, that woman looks beautiful. I don't think, oh, I hope she gets on well with her dad. I hope she doesn't have diabetes. What's she like as a soul, as another person here in infinite space? I just think, well, she looks nice. Objectification, an attitude in which women are objects, right, by size, shape, harmony of body parts. Guilty of that all of the time because, you know, I've been acculturated and trained to. This is something that I work on, like, no, come on, see everybody as equal human beings. But once that biological drive to procreate is connected with a culture of objectification, that's a very hard equation to break.
Russell Brand, actor and comedian, in one of his video blogs about the effect of softcore porn. Jessica Green, what's your reaction to that?
Well, I think that due to technology being so vast and everywhere the way that it is, it's a really wonderful thing in a lot of ways, but it also can be really harmful because not only softcore porn, but also hardcore porn is a very easily accessible, and boys are accessing these sorts of images at younger and younger ages. And what used to be shocking 20 years ago is now so commonplace. And so there's little to no mediation, little to no conversation about these images that they're seeing and what that means and how that's not really an accurate depiction of what actual relationships are like. And so people get the wrong messages from earlier and earlier ages, and it's really hard to combat that.
We have a question from a listener who wants to remain anonymous. The question, the focus is often on survivors, but what about the people who purchase these women and children? What is being done to educate this population, particularly young men, particularly servicemen?
The Safe Harbor Act in October 2013, you know, a lot of things changed with that to include punishments for the traffickers and for the consumers, the Johns. All of the punishments have stiffened. Don't quote me exactly on it. I'm not exactly sure, but I know for a fact that they are now much more harsh than they were before.
The punishments for the people who are purchasing these services.
Yes, ma'am.
Jessica Green.
Well, in regards to young men, I can definitely give a wonderful shout out to our Rape Prevention Education Department, because they are in our schools, in our community, talking with young women and men about primary prevention of sexual violence, which includes sex trafficking. So they're addressing things that lead to the objectification of other people, that lead to perpetrating behaviors such as believing in rigid gender stereotypes, the oppression of other human beings. All of these things are addressed, and the results that they're getting are really wonderful. We actually had to go from working with eighth graders because we were getting awesome results, but they were telling us by the time in eighth grade, we're already experiencing sexual harassment in the hallway, unwanted touching, sexually suggestive comments. So this is really wonderful and great and educative, but it is too late. So now we've kind of shifted and we're going with younger children to try and prevent this from ever happening.
That's got to be a little shocking for a parent to think that their sixth grader needs education about things like inappropriate touching or sexual violence in a relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it can be very surprising, but if you just watch any television show that's aimed towards teenagers, I have young cousins and they'll mention shows, and so I'll watch them to kind of see what it is that they're watching. And there's one that a predominant relationship is actually between a student and a teacher. And we're rooting for this couple because that's how they're portraying it, is that it's romantic. And in my mind, I'm like, I cannot believe that they are seeing this and that they're being told that this is what romance is supposed to be, because it's illegal and highly, highly inappropriate.
Detective Campbell, what should a parent do if they suspect that their child might be communicating online with a sexual predator?
Really, parents have got to stay on top of what their kids are doing as far as, you know, with the cell phones and iPods and iPads and computers and all that. A lot of parents, especially when I was in juvenile detective, they would ask, what can I do? Give your kids a flip phone that doesn't take pictures, that all it does is make phone calls. And, they don't need to have that access in the palm of their hand to be able to communicate with people like that. That's really the biggest thing. I think that's the root of a lot of problems right now, is the amount of access that these kids have to the outside world.
And so certainly when that child goes home, they're inevitably going to get on social media on the computer at home. Is there anything that parents can do at home? Because certainly a lot of this happens under the same roof.
Right. Just monitor it or prevent it, you know. Make them go outside. Make them be kids outside. And be involved in things. The more they sit there and are not doing that, then the more susceptible they are to this.
Jessica Green from the Rape Crisis Center.
Well, I think it's also important to encourage parents to have conversations with kids about these sorts of things. I think we're so terrified to engage in conversations about things like healthy sexuality because all we hear is sex, and that we think that then we're going to be giving kids ideas. But if we are engaging in a dialogue saying, I want to talk to you about these things, and you may be seeing these images, you may be getting these messages, and I want to discuss this with you, then you're becoming an askable parent, which means that if something does happen, if you do get a message where there's something really inappropriate, that child feels like they can come and they can talk to you. Because if you don't talk about healthy sexuality, then that's giving the message of this is something that we are not okay talking about, and that can be really harmful.
So a parent could hear this and agree with you in theory,
right,
about the advantages of talking with your child. But when it comes to the practical world, let's say this parent's head explodes. This parent has no skills for doing that. Is there anything the parent can do to find some guidance?
Well, there's lots of resources out there. If you contact us at the Rape Crisis Center, we would be happy to point you in the right direction, because this is a really important discussion to have, and it is a huge, huge preventative factor for sexual violence or sex trafficking.
The media has given a lot of attention to human trafficking and sex trafficking in the last few years. It's a topic that fascinates the public. Is there an upside to that? Are there things that the public can be looking for? What do you want to leave people with about signs to look for, potential red flags, ways that they can actually contribute to squashing this in this community? Detective Campbell.
I think the media has raised a lot of awareness, as well as local nonprofits here that are doing a lot of outreach. One in particular, A Safe Place, they do outreach in churches and a lot of community events. So a lot of people now are seeing what's going on. And there's actually a hotline number where if you see something, that you can report it. If you want, I can give that to you now.
Please.
It's 855-723-7529. And if you see something, just like the officer that makes a traffic stop that thinks something's not quite right, if you think something's not quite right, then say something and you know, call it in, and then we'll look into it. I mean, I get feedback directly from that hotline, and, you know, the conviction that we got in September of last year was a result of that number.
Jessica Green, final thoughts. What can people do?
Well, I think that all the awareness and attention that it's getting is really wonderful, because we are recognizing that it's not people being held in chains and ropes. We're seeing less and less pictures that are kind of depicting that, because that's not a realistic view of what we're seeing. You know, these people are able to go out and to walk and talk and do all of those things without chains or a rope. However, it's the psychological hold. And I think that us having an understanding of that's really important.
That's this edition of Coastline. I'd like to thank our guests, Detective Will Campbell of the New Hanover County Sheriff's Office and Jessica Green of Coastal Horizons Rape Crisis Center. Thanks also to you, our listeners, those of you who called in and emailed. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Join us for the next Coastline when we explore where we are in North Carolina with four terminal groin projects. That's next Wednesday at noon here on HQR News 91.3 FM. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.